Welcome to Writers Radio. I'm your host, Ingrid Rose, and I'm talking with Anjana Yonghui, whose third book of poetry, Follow the River, has recently come out with Caitlin Press.
Souvenir, remembrance. Think of the pear. It was summer long ago when we plucked from the garden pears greened by wind and sun. I walk along a corridor in the Museum of Memory, tempted by many tantalizing doors, still ajar. Even happy remembrances bring pain, the quiet, bodily throbbing of the lost. Love always calls in slow moments. The first time I looked at you, something opened in me. Suddenly my heart like bells. I do not tell you all this to get you back, except to tell you that you have been loved wholly, resolutely, and with the eye of time. Electricity fails us. Distance fails us. Time fails us, as does age. And yet all this surpassed by the moment of green among the tall grasses, by the pear.
Where to begin on? Wow, you're so multi-talented. And it obviously runs in your family.
Yeah, my brother is artistic. He's a visual artist, a painter. And my dad had some inkling, but he never really explored that side of him. I think it just came out in our generation for some reason.
Yes, maybe it had the space, because when I looked at your brother's website, so he's older than you, right?
6 years.
Because he actually lived in Sham, didn't he?
He was born in the jungles of Burma or Myanmar. They lived there for a while, and then eventually they moved to Thailand, and then that's where I was born.
How much do the roots of your family affect you?
Well, I think that's a complicated question, because growing up, neither me nor my brother, neither of us were told about the history and our grandparents, really. We just kind of overheard stories from when my parents' friends came over and so on. So we didn't grow up with that history. And I think as adults, we kind of like went back. My dad wrote a memoir, a book about Shan State, fighting for the country. And I have an aunt who's also a writer, and she writes a lot of histories and Shan histories. And as adults, we kind of went back to that. I think it really did affect me. The history is not weighty on a personal level per se, but I do feel like I should know a lot more than I do. I feel like I have a responsibility to know more. Those stories I don't tell to people that I know or meet, or a deeper level.
Tell me a little bit about Shan, what that means, because It sounds, from what I gather, your family had a very big role.
Our people are the Shan. We're an ethnic minority within Burma, and one of many, many ethnic minorities in that country. Our family, or my grandfather, was the last Salpa, or like ruling prince of that state. He eventually, after the British left, he was made the first president of the country, the unified Burma, which was meant to be a kind of democracy. And then my grandmother was also involved in politics, very powerful woman. In 1962, a military coup, I guess the first military coup in Burma, happened. My grandfather was thrown in jail, and he died in jail. A lot of the family escaped to Thailand, and then my father went underground to join the Shan State Army. So he fought against the military in the jungles there. That's where my brother was born. My mother joined. Yeah, lots of history, very complicated history. It's hard to actually tell people in so many words because it's so complex. Even now, like the country is still successive military dictatorships. It's quite unfortunate.
It's a past that in some ways is very present, but difficult to grasp.
I think that's fair to say. I think knowing the history and not knowing it when we were growing up as kids lent a big prominence and weight to me looking back. My parents were very strict and we didn't have like the best relationship or whatever, but then I think knowing that history and kind of the losses they experience as young people and as like, older people coming to Canada and all that, I think that provided me with a lot of like feeling for them and a lot of compassion. And I see them more understanding, and especially me growing older in my 40s now. And and just like, yeah, just experiencing all the loss. I can't imagine how much they had endured and that they survived at all. I think in my poetry, that depth of feeling kind of comes through just because I do have a lot of feeling for them, complicated feelings. I do feel the heaviness of their losses for sure.
The beginning. We make a nest out of old loose leaf papers, cat hair, and dusty books. I wear your plaid shirt to smell faintly of you. We lay on the bed face to face. I tell you about my grandfather who died in a Burmese prison. Much of my family have gone unhinged from a grief they deny. I reveal how difficult it is to live with this nose, these eyes, this brown skin, to be always thought of as foreign. You tell me about living estranged from your mother and sister, how closed up you became when you were left with your dad. Kindness was something you did not experience as a child. You stopped smiling at the age of 7. Both of us have recovered from anger. We breathe, we open our eyes, no longer turn away from the world. We breathe. You see me, I see you. We turn toward each other, toward the world.
Anjana Yonghui, coming to Canada at the age of 7, not speaking English and not looking like white people, clearly shaped your experience of becoming a Canadian.
Oh, for sure. Like it's been, I think, a struggle. I never knew like where I belonged really, because back then in the 80s, there were immigrants, not that many, and everyone was kind of they lived in my neighborhood, like the Mount Pleasant neighborhood that used to be where all the lower income immigrants and folks lived. There was no one of my own culture or even like from Thailand, and I felt isolated within that immigrant community because, there was a large Chinese population and like other populations, and I saw their connections and I wanted those kind of connections. But I didn't have them, and I also didn't have that kind of connection at first because of like the language barrier, and later on, white people, that kind of thing. So it was like an isolating I guess childhood and experience, but I don't know. I think I learned how to be alone and like thrive alone, and that's kind of what made me who I am, I think.
You started writing at quite a young age.
Yeah, I mean, I started like a lot of teenagers. I started writing in a journal when I was a teenager, and it was actually very helpful because I had a lot of anger and I had a lot of emotions when I was that age. And I was so isolated, and so like reading and writing became kind of my friends. Started out that way. Like, I didn't really think about becoming a writer until much, much later. But since I was a kid, I just loved reading. I read all the time. I stayed at home and read books upon books.
But you also created your own little books, and you're also a visual artist. It may not be something that you trained specifically in, but clearly it gives you great pleasure.
Yeah, I love creating in general, like whether it's visual stuff or even like craft stuff. But I guess like when I was in university, I started making these little books, handmade chapbooks. I found real joy in it because you're doing something with your hands and you're creating something out of nothing. You have complete control over every aspect of the creation, which is quite wonderful. Me and a couple of friends, we created a micro press called Fish Magic Press, and we made a bunch of little books. It was a really, really good time. That aspect of myself is something that I really, really enjoy. I still do, like not as like publications, but like every once in a while, I do like a one-off special book.
And now you have three officially published
Yes.
the poetry. Do you feel like a poet these days?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I don't know. I think more of myself as a writer and trying to express things with words that are difficult to express or that captures moments or feelings, and whether that be that is through like poetry or prose or like visual art stuff. I think to me, they're all the same. So I don't really think of myself as a poet per se. I guess I am because I all the books I publish are poetry. But yeah, I think of myself a bit more broadly, I suppose. Even with hands cracked from cleaning, still she beckons me to sit by her lap. Amidst the sound of cars rushing past, the hum of evergreens and mountains that loom over our small apartment, she begins to braid, humming Connie Francis tunes. But only later do I wonder what she dreamed of. If she longed for late afternoons when geckos begin to appear, when the air is draped with mangoes and reckless chirrups. Her fingers dream force for me as her hands twist and pull hard so that I wouldn't break. Under her palms I fall under the tops of trees, into warmth and spice and waving sunlight, into memories of green and sky and a land where she fits. Through the tough pull and tug of hair, bare and strong, her hands tumble me into her sarong.
Anjana Yonghui, mother-daughter relationships can be tough. But strolling the corridors of the Museum of Memory, as you framed it, understanding and compassion can come. It's difficult to make a living as a poet.
Yes. I knew that I could never make a living through writing or any kind of writing, even like becoming a journalist, an editor, I feel like that would have depleted my creative energy somewhat. So I wanted to work at a place where, yeah, I didn't have to use up that creative energy, and that was like secure. So for a while, I did ESL teaching, and then I did so a lot of office work. And then 8 years ago, I became a nurse. It's good so far. It's a good job. It's very, very interesting. It's never boring. Quite difficult and stressful, as you can imagine. But on the whole, I'm happy with my choice.
I imagine it's got that aspect of being hands-on as well as caring for people in so many different ways.
It is. Yeah, you're not like in front of the computer all day, which I something I did not like about office jobs in general, but get to like talk to people and yeah, a little bit more active.
Anjana Yonghui, let's hear another of your poems.
Crossings. Between us, words, rocks, your arms start to falter. They are too heavy. We fall into oceans. A friend says that sons and daughters somehow carry the tragedies of their parents. Written on their hands, loss is passed on. What are mother and father but loss unnamed? For the country they have given up, for the waters crossed, for the poverty of the brand new, for time uncertain, wavering on a pin. The river carries it all, the burdens, the heavy heart, always filling, always emptying.
How do you go about writing a poem? How do poems come to you?
I guess I get inspired by doing ordinary things. Like, for example, I like to go out walking, and then certain lines come to me, like pieces of music or a melody, and they stick to me. And then I, kind of draft something on the computer or in a notebook. And then I like to take a break from the draft and see and come back to it to see if there's any worth or value in going there. And maybe like some avenues of investigation would open up and I would go there, or I would kind of maybe feel like I need to put it away and come back to it later. We follow the river. Nurses tip you over as if you were filled with oceans. They swaddle your hollow hips in cloth and plastic, utter whiteness. The hospital's patch of grass is worn down by back and forth. Your bed is too bright. Do you ever remember snow falling? No one quite knew about you. Or how much time you had. In your brain, a stem that doesn't flower. The air becometh mouths that are forever swallowing. Some days you remember us. Most days you don't speak at all. Outside, the SkyTrain slices cleanly into the blue horizon. The new station like a human spine. Metal rafters gray and skeletal. The day we sat by your empty urn, we sat on stones, pant cuffs wet with river. So many stories will never be complete now. You died not peacefully like a river, but gasping like a hot ocean. We follow the Fraser,
The sun bending water in brindled fingerprints. Fish are invisible under such light. In the distance, they are making new mountains out of steel and glass now.
In your poem Evening Prayer, which we'll end with, as children, you and your brother mouthed the prayer without knowing the meaning.
The Buddhist prayers are in Sanskrit, which is like an ancient Buddhist text. It's not in Thai or Shan or anything. So it's like a foreign language that we learn the sounds of and repeat. And then our parents tell us what they mean. And I think it's like that kind of prayer is, you kind of know what it means, but it serves as a comfort, like voicing of them or the sounds of them just does something to you, I think.
Yes, very chant-like in the poem.
Mm-hmm.
Did your family continue with the Buddhist practice?
Well, there weren't any Buddhist temples near where we live. We're from Thailand and Southeast Asia, so it's a different kind of thing. All of the Buddhist practice my parents did was at home. So we had a Buddhist altar with Buddha figurines and statues. And my mother was more like the religious one. My father, not so much, not really my brother or me either, but every day she would offer food and water to the altar and kind of pray, a very, very important part of her life, even until the end.
And now, does that have any role in your life?
It does. Like Buddhism has a big role in my life, but not the type that I grew up with. So the type that I grew up was very ritualistic and had certain things you had to do. And the kind of Buddhism that attracted me was more like the Zen Buddhism. When I was a young woman, I read a lot of Vietnamese monks' books, Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yeah.
And I loved him so much, and his writings definitely changed my life. So I'm more like the Zen Buddhist style versus the more ritualistic Theravada style that I grew up with. Yeah. So it has like played an important role in my life, but more as like a lifestyle or philosophy, or like as a means to letting go of anger or negative emotion and letting things kind of pass and accepting the impermanence of things.
Evening Prayer. Between sleep and dream, from the pull of mouth muscle, the twitch of tongue, into the hum of throat, down to the column, solid heart of self. Buddha Saranam Gacchami. The nights we climbed into mum's bed, sleep tiptoeing. Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. We would repeat until the lone lamped room rose and filled with level deep rumblings of a language we lost and didn't understand. Mouths memorizing mouth shapes. Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Remember not the meaning, but the feeling of those words. For the space they open into cloud and blue sky, like a breeze combing back to loosen strands of your hair.
That was Anjana Yonghui reading her poem, Evening Prayer. Do go to her website for more information about her books and where you can buy them. This was Writers Radio. I'm Ingrid Rose. A pleasure to have been your host for this program. My deep appreciation for my co-producers and co-hosts, Carol Harmon and Gary Sill, who is also our music man and technical genie. And my appreciation goes to you, our listeners. Thank you for joining us.
You have been listening to Writers Radio, a non-commercial collaborative project which presents talented writers reading their own work. These stories, essays, and conversations revisit the long tradition of oral storytelling that connects us to the inspiration behind the words. Be sure to check the website, writersradio.ca, to subscribe to our free notifications list. It's also a way of letting the writers know you are there and appreciating their creative work.
Writers Radio broadcasts from Half Moon Bay on the Sunshine Coast in Canada, traditional tribal land of the Shishel Nation of the Coast Salish peoples. We express our gratitude for their wisdom teachings and land stewardship.